seventh essay, which is enthusiasm, utsahamai, which is proportionate to the faith. So last week we had a discussion on the cause of indifference or lack of faith or lack of enthusiasm. So this is we are discussing various reasons of not having enthusiasm and how to have enthusiasm. So first is perceiving that work is not meant for him, not beneficial for him. So if I feel that this work is not meant for me, then I will not feel any enthusiasm to do that activity. So, and also when one person feels unqualified for that activity, or if he feels qualified for the activity, he is enthusiastic. If he feels unqualified, he will not feel enthusiastic. So if one feels that, oh, I am qualified for that, then there is enthusiasm. So we had a very elaborate discussion on it. So first is, we are seeing the benefits. So if we feel benefited, then we are enthusiastic. And second is, if I feel I am qualified for it, I am. So then we discuss what are the qualification for Jnana Yoga. For Jnana Yoga, the qualification is a person should be detached. That means his heart should be completely pure from all the karma vasanas. So then when heart is purified from all the samskaras, whatever impressions he has, and that is, he will achieve by practicing Nishkam Karma Yoga. And what is the qualification to practice Nishkam Karma Yoga? This person should be, he should not be disgusted with material life, and also he have desire to fulfill his material, or he has desire to fulfill, to enjoy in this material world, and also he has some faith in the faith in, of course, some Shastra faith is there, then he is qualified Karma Yoga. And then third is qualification for Bhakti, that is Shraddha. So this is very important for us. So this is elaborately discussed, the qualification for Bhakti, that is Shraddha, pure faith in the devotional practice. It is attained through Ajnata Sukriti. So then next we are discussed more elaborately on this sloka. So what is the symptom? Okay, now first we should know that I am qualified for Bhakti. So whether I am qualified or not, so this is how we understand it. And this is a shloka which Krishna tells in Bhagavatam. Jata Shraddha Matkatasu. So he has awakened faith in the process of Bhakti. And also Nirvinna Sarva Karmashu. He is disgusted with Varnashram prescribed duties. And third thing is Veda Dukhatmakam Kam. He understands that sense gratification leads to misery. So these are all the qualifications. And then Parityagya Panishura. He is still unable to give up sense gratification. But the most important, Jashamanamscha Tan Kaman Dukho Darkamscha Garhan. Even though he knows that it is sense gratification leads to misery, unable to give sense gratification, but he is unable to give up that sense gratification, he sincerely repents for engaging in such activities. Even though he knows it is wrong, he knows bhakti is the ultimate, it is the thing I am supposed to do, but still he does it, so he feels repentant. And Krishna says to such sadhakas, he says, Tato bhajeta mam prita shraddhalu drudha nishchaya. So, Preeta here indicates enthusiasm. Still with full enthusiasm, one need to practice Bhakti and remain enthusiastic and worship me with great faith and determination. This is what Krishna is suggesting. So, this is the qualification. So, some may say, "Are I have more enthusiasm for sense gratification than Bhakti. So, am I qualified for Bhakti then?" Then the answer is no, but the enthusiasm for sense gratification is coming from our conditioning. And how do we ultimately feel after engaging in that sense gratification? So if we are feeling a little morose and feeling unhappy, so then we should feel there is some morose that happens. Why am I doing this? this activity. So this is actually the position of a sadhaka. So for sadhaka, the enthusiasm for bhakti comes from his faith, but whereas enthusiasm for sense gratification comes from his conditionings. So this is actually the position. So for him, there is a faith in bhakti, but because he is conditioned, he engages sense gratification. But after engaging, he feels a little unhappy, and some may express it unhappiness, not just crying. We are Prabhuji was discussing that he may more enthusiastically engage in Krishna consciousness. So that's how he expresses his remorsefulness. And therefore, when a devotee gets big success in his sense gratification endeavor, at the end he feels regret. And whereas if the devotee gets even little success in bhakti, that endeavor, so he feels great satisfaction. So, and then there is enthusiasm comes by understanding, understanding our qualification. So this is the point. So that means we are completely qualified. Even though I have so much enthusiasm for sense gratification and I have so many other conditioning, but still we are qualified, and that's why we need to be enthusiastic for practicing bhakti. So when we understand that we are qualified for bhakti, we can enthusiastically practice it. So for karma and jnana, there is so much qualifications needed. Bhakti, only qualification is pure shraddha, like that. And then we had discussion, okay, what is the nature of the of pure devotional faith? Yadrichaya matkatado jata shraddhastu yah puman na nirvino na sak nati sakto bhakti yogasya siddhadaha. So he na nirvinaha, not falsely detached, and na ati asakto atisaktaha, not very much attached to material existence. So a bhakti yogi is not detached like a jnani yogi, and also does not have the goal to enjoy in the material world. Also they accept some material activities as a support for their spiritual awakening, but they have no attachment for such activities. So that means they may do material activities, but it is not that they are not attached to it. They are doing it because that is supportive for their bhakti. That's why anukulasa sankalpa patikulasa vachana. And also he accepts without attachment only those activities that are favorable for increasing his faith in the Lord. So this is how this bhakti yoga when he is doing. Also, then there is another question. Should we feel guilty if we have enthusiasm for maintaining our material body and doing our material occupational duties? So the answer is, without the material body, we cannot cultivate devotional service. So we need to properly maintain our body. We need to give proper time and energy. So there is no benefit if one renounces the activities that are needed to maintain the physical body. So we should not renounce, thinking them to be source of miserable. So we should not do such. We should take care of body so that we can perform devotion nicely. Also, the fruits of those activities which are the source of misery for others, and therefore enjoyed by others. So for devotees, even though they engage the activities, but they understand it that it is for the it is in the mood of anukulasa sankalpa. It is not that some material renunciation. So, and then by taking care of the body properly, one will have a healthy body by which a devotee can serve Krishna nicely. So this brings devotee great joy. And also then there is another point, like whereas others keep their body healthy so that they can engage them more and more in sense gratification, which brings them misery. And then we have the next point. Devotees get to enjoy the fruits of their bhakti. So by practice of bhakti, one gets prema. So these are the things which helps us to increase our faith so that we can more enthusiastically to increase our enthusiasm. So these are the things we need to understand. So first is, by practice of bhakti, one get prema in the end. So these are the benefits. And but even at the anarthanivritti stage, one experiences some benefits due to the practice of bhakti. So first two benefits of practicing bhakti are, in bhakti samsundriti said, klesha agni and shubhada. So shubhada, we have four benefits of shubhada. So we have, it bestows all good qualities. We become attracted to all living entities, a person, a devotee, and devotee has great compassion for others. And the last thing is, it bestows great happiness. So these are the benefits of Shubhada. And then the devotee do bare minimum to keep their body healthy and enthusiastically engage in devotional service. So for Karmi, there is affection for material enjoyment. For a devotee, he has affection for Krishna, but due to conditioning, he may succumb to material enjoyment. So he may look like doing material activities, but for him, the affection is for Krishna, not for the material enjoyment. And then devotee accepts whatever is favorable for their devotional service, and they do whatever is needed to keep their body and soul together and enthusiastically practice bhakti. And then we have discussion on process of advancement for a sadhaka. So all these things help us to be more enthusiastic. So what are the benefits a devotee gets? So when an intelligent person engages constantly in worshipping me through bhakti, all the material desires within the heart are destroyed. And then ahankara is cut and all doubts are destroyed, all karma vasanas are destroyed. So anyway, karma is initially only destroyed. Even the karma vasanas get destroyed like that. And then real bhakti is uttam bhakti. Nirashishah. The devotee practice bhakti only for the pleasure of Krishna. Anyabhilashita shunyam and nirapekshasya means that the bhakti does not depend on other processes like karma and jnana. So this is the purport is like now we need not try any other thing. So it is useless trying independently to destroy ignorance or lust. Bhakti automatically does that for us. So we need not separately try. And separate enthusiastic endeavor for anartha nivritti through jnana, vairagya, yoga, etc. is not at all needed. Just do bhakti, we'll get everything. So we can be fully enthusiastic for bhakti, no need of enthusiasm for any other things. And then have full enthusiasm for bhakti. So ignorance, lust, fruitive activities, all doubts and material bondage are destroyed by the mercy of the Lord in course of cultivation devotional service. Therefore, enthusiasm should be there only for devotional service. That's the main thing. And one should have no enthusiasm for the goals of karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti, mukti and siddhi, nothing. In the very beginning of devotional sadhaka, must have faith with full enthusiasm. I may say, okay, how would a sadhaka have full enthusiasm at the beginning stage of bhakti? We cannot have full, na? But full enthusiasm means whatever enthusiasm one have, it should be only for bhakti, no other process. So that is like what is important. Okay, I have little 10%. That 10% is only for bhakti, nothing, no other things. So someone may have low enthusiasm, but low enthusiasm, that also only for bhakti, no other thing. Even if you are lazy, you can do little bit, do it only bhakti, don't do any other thing. One does not think that one need to practice any other process with bhakti. So purity of faith enthusiasm versus strength of faith enthusiasm. So we may have purity of faith is there initially, and eventually strength of faith comes. Why we don't have strength of faith? Because so for full enthusiasm means purity of faith, enthusiasm for only bhakti. But because we have conditionings, so only with the pure faith and full enthusiasm may have might have weak faith and low enthusiasm, but this is because of our conditioning and impure heart. So that's why we don't have strength of faith initially like that. And then we had discussion on that don't lose enthusiasm during the six stages of unsteady devotional service. So this is also another thing that is discussed. Unsteady devotional service stage of bhajana kriya, that is stage of bhajana kriya anartha nivritti, and stage of devotional service stage of nishtha. So there are six unsteady stages of devotional service: utsahamayi, ganatarala, vyudavikalpa, vishaya sangraha, niyamakshama, tarangarangani. So at all these levels, so these are discussed at all these levels, we should continue to remain enthusiastic. At all different levels, we have different struggles that we undergo, but we need to continue to keep that enthusiasm. And then this is at the stage of unsteady devotional practices. And there is another thing. This is if we don't have, there is lack of enthusiasm, it is inattentiveness is the sign. So if somebody is not enthusiastic, that means he is not attentive also. So this is very important discussion. In order to progress, there should be no inattentiveness. We should be very, very attentive, and one should consciously try to overcome the three types of inattentiveness to enthusiastically practice devotional service. So addressing inattentiveness to really become enthusiastic. So we need to address this point of. So this is actually the 11th offense, to be inattentive, especially in chanting, any other activity. This is discussed. So this is from Harinam Chintamani. This is an offense and mother of all offenses. So inattention or carelessness while chanting, but it's a mother of all offenses. Even if one avoids all other offenses but does not avoid inattention while chanting, Krishna Prema may not come. So there are three types of inattentiveness: Audasinita, Jadya, and Vikshipta. So this is discussed. Audasinita is indifference. There is not absorbed in the holy name while chanting, but in some other material objects. The cause is material attachment. And what is the solution? Chanting in the association of Vaishnavas, and chant in a place which is filled. We should not chant in a place which is filled with material vibrations. Chanting in the dham in front of Tulsi Maharaj in a secluded room. Concentrate on the name by covering the eyes, ears and nose with a cloth, and gradually increase the quantity of rounds. And for jadya laziness, the reasons are chanting with a sluggish mind and stopping between chanting one round. So, and the solution is take association of Vaishnavas who do not waste time in material activity but constantly chant and remember the holy name, being absorbed only in the name. By this, enthusiasm will come to the lazy mind and he will overcome the offenses of laziness. One will become determined to increase his chanting every day. And the last most important is Vikshipta. This is the mother of inattentive chanting. So all the offenses, this inattention is the cause of. In that also Vikshipta is more dangerous. So this is actually caused because of attraction for the opposite gender, attraction for wealth, attraction for material success, desire for position, and cheating propensity. And the solution is follow proper Vaishnava Sadachar, take advantage of Madhavati and chant all day and night in the association of devotees. And one should never be inattentive to complete one's prescribed number of rounds. This should be noted day by day. And don't increase number of rounds for show. First concentrate nicely on what we can easily manage. And always keep praying to the Lord to chant attentively. And keep begging for mercy because that alone one can accomplish anything. So this is all. We can give up inattention and then we can be enthusiastic with this. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think a lot of the material we were going to cover today, we have not yet covered. I think inattentive chanting, and I think I mentioned that we will cover little bit in detail lack of enthusiasm due to service. I thought I said I'll elaborate on that from Madhurya Kadambini, and also we decided that we will discuss about inattentive chanting from Harinam Chintamani. I think we have not covered it yet. We have to cover today. So yeah, but that was quite a comprehensive summary. Any quick questions, comments, discussion points, anything anyone would like to share as add on this theme till now, whatever we have discussed? Yes, Nitai Mata Mataji.
Yeah. Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes, ma'am.
That was really very, very, it was very good because I missed the class last week. And when Prabhu was mentioning inattentive chanting and the like eager for positions. So even in our devotional circles, it can happen sometimes, Prabhu. Do you want to? So even we really look for the positions, and even whatever service we do, we really desire for positions. Is that also coming from inattentive chanting, Prabhu?
Yeah, it can definitely come from inattentive chanting.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sometimes devotees really get into that. Oh, no, not that. You know, especially with the no, this is my group. This is this. That is, you can't do that way. You know, I don't know. Sometimes it becomes a bit. It becomes really difficult to put it in the head. You know, you totally forget that you are doing a service, or you totally forget that Krishna is the center. It becomes me and my group.
It can happen.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you very
Hare
much.
Krishna. Thank you. Gail Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Yeah, a couple things. We have said that for a bhakti yogi, varnashram, he becomes disgusted with varnashram. I don't
Well,
remember what was the reason.
yeah, he does not become disgusted in the sense he does not have faith in Varnashram. His faith is in bhakti. He does not think that by not performing Varnashram duties, I cannot progress spiritually, or he does not think that, oh, by performing Varnashram duties nicely, I will progress nicely in my devotional service. He does not have this kind of understanding. Basically, he is very detached. I mean, not disgusted. I would say it is, you can say, disinterested, or he is uninterested in performing Varnashram duties because he does not consider that it is his adhikar, it is his qualification. Because he understands that he is qualified for bhakti, so therefore he does not practice varnashram duties. That's the understanding.
Okay, although he might take help from performing Varnashram in order for his success in Bhakti Yogi yoga, right? But he just that he doesn't depend on it.
Well, he doesn't. In one sense, he understands that progress in spiritual life is only based on my practice of ninefold activities of bhakti. Apart from that, there is nothing else needed for me to progress.
Well, I'm trying to reconcile
Other
the
than
fact
that,
that
whatever is favorable for what, Mati?
I was going to say that I was just trying to reconcile the fact that Srila Prabhupada was so eager for Varnashram to be established in our society.
He did want. I have given an elaborate discussion on this. What exactly did Prabhupada want when he said he wanted to establish Varnashram? And what do the acharyas say? And how do you reconcile it in such a way that it is what Prabhupada said is not seeming to contradict what the acharyas say? So it's a very elaborate discussion, but in essence, Prabhupada, when he said that he wanted to establish Varnashram, it is primarily for those who may not have the faith in pure devotional practices. For them, at least as a stepping stone, Prabhupada wanted the system of Varnashram to be established, but not for the devotees themselves. So Prabhupada very clearly says in many of his discussions, oh, this is not for us. Bhakti has nothing to do with Varnashram. You know, many times Prabhupada repeats it, but it's a very elaborate discussion. It will take me, basically what Bhagavatam says, what Bhakti Rasamrita says, what Bhagavad Gita says, what the acharyas are explaining, and then finally, then why did Prabhupada say that Varnashram is needed? It's essentially not for it's not for devotees. It is primarily for those who are who may in future accept devotional service, but not ready to accept pure devotional service. Then, as a stepping stone, Varnashram is what Prabhupada wanted.
Okay, thank you so much. And another thing was I didn't catch why it is that A bhakti yogi might have, his faith is pure, but it's weak. Is it just that he needs to intensify his sadhana? Or I don't remember the reason that was given.
Yeah, because it has not yet been sufficiently strengthened by association, by sadhana.
I'm sorry. I mean, yeah,
strengthened.
Sufficiently.
It has not yet been strengthened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, by proper association, by proper practice of devotional service for long enough time, by avoiding offenses, by properly understanding the scriptures, and by trying to put the scriptural teachings into practice. By all these things, his faith has not yet been strengthened. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it remains weak till it is strengthened.
Okay. And then, well, I think the last thing was, you know, last week, I don't know if you will recall, having said that for one who accepts Bhakti Yoga, for him, karma is destroyed immediately.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking that I've only heard that in relationship to a person accepting Diksha initiation, not just, you know, having accepted Bhakti Yoga or feeling or having faith.
Well, in that case, then the question. When do you say that he has accepted Diksha? The question is, when do you say that he has accepted Diksha? Is it the ceremony which defines, or the moment he understands that I need to accept a spiritual master? I need a guru, or I need a guidance in my spiritual life. Is that the mark of Diksha, and then the process is actually the actual process of receiving Diksha culminates that. So that we have to see. So so the understanding is that the moment, the mark of that faith, one of the symptoms of that faith is that the person understands that I cannot progress alone in this path of devotional service. I need guidance. I need a spiritual master. So that is a symptom of that faith. So therefore, along with that faith comes the desire for Adav Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. After Shraddha is Sadhu Sangha, the desire for Sadhu Sangha also includes desire for accepting a spiritual master. So at that moment, the karma is gone.
Okay. And yeah, and I think you said the karma meaning karmic reactions from the past, not obviously not karma varnas, right?
Karma vasanas. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Not the impressions.
Yeah.
Materialistic karmic impressions. Karmic reactions are gone, but karmic impressions are not gone. It goes gradually.
However, you know, because we continue to act for our selfish enjoyment, we are continuously creating more karmic reactions, isn't it?
Can you repeat?
Even though we have come to that point of sadhu sangha, we know that we need spiritual master, and therefore our karmic reactions up to that point have gone, right? But because our mentality is such that we still act for our selfish enjoyment, we are still continuing to create a situation for karmic reactions to come back.
No.
Okay, so the answer is no, because our faith is still in this Bhakti Yoga process. Right?
Yeah. It is only due to our conditioning that we engage in our selfish activities. But as long as we, while engaging in these selfish activities, as long as there is regret and an understanding that this is not the ideal standard for me, I should be acting for the pleasure of Guru, Krishna and Vaishnavas. And as long as it is just a question of succumbing to our conditioning and there is regret, mm-hmm. so there mm-hmm. is no generation of karma.
Oh, wow. That's so, so nice. I mean, I know I've heard you say this before, but I always need to hear, get it reinforced. Thank you so much. That's it for me.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Vilasini Radha Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Prabhuji, there regarding chanting, there was mentioned that don't increase your rounds, rather whatever you have, just increase the concentration. That
we have not completed that portion. Actually, I said we will cover it today, but we have not covered it yet. So after we cover, then we will take those questions.
Yeah, fine, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Okay. So there are a few things in the chat box here. Okay, there is a question. In this world, somehow or other, many people may get Agyat Sukriti. Are all qualified for Bhakti Yoga? No. By when that accumulation of Agyat Sukriti becomes sufficient enough to generate faith in Bhakti Yoga, then they are qualified for Bhakti Yoga. Otherwise, just little bit of Agyat Sukriti, if someone gets, that is not good enough. Such a person is not yet qualified for Bhakti Yoga. Okay, another question. Sometimes I bring the picture of, okay, anything about chanting we have not yet discussed. That's just by mistake, you know, it's there on the summary sheet. We have not yet discussed. For those of you who have attended last time, I said I will cover it today, but it has not been covered yet. So I will take those questions later. Okay. Then there is another question. Srila Prabhupada mentioned sometimes that he is getting diseases because of his disciples are engaged in sinful activities. Does karma get transferred to the spiritual master? No. No. When the devotee himself is not suffering his own karma, why should the spiritual master, who is much more advanced, why should he suffer the reactions of his disciples' karma? That is mentioned in such a way, but it is not really true. It makes no sense. The spiritual master does not suffer the karma of his disciples. No, that is certainly. But having said that, he takes responsibility for the disciple. And if the disciple is getting distracted and he moves, if he is not properly practicing, and if the spiritual master does not correct his disciple, which means if he is not performing the duty of a spiritual master properly, then Krishna may punish the spiritual master for refusing. So, which means so therefore that is possible. Or sometimes if the spiritual master accepts disciples indiscriminately without properly considering whether the disciple is qualified or not, and if he just accepts disciples for name, fame, for increasing the number, or if he thinks that the disciple is very wealthy, if I give him initiation, he will support my projects and things like that. Which means if the spiritual master is not properly qualified, then Krishna may punish that spiritual master. But there is no transfer of karma as such. Okay, there is a question. Then how does the spiritual master fall ill after giving initiation? Not all spiritual masters fall ill after giving initiation. This is not true. It is said that he takes all karma when he gives diksha, so he falls ill. No, 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 no. It's not like that. It's not like that. It's a question of there is an anecdote that Srila Prabhupada says that I know if I put my deity, all suffering comes, but still I am ready to accept. I don't understand what it is. Okay. Anyway, so why does he fall ill? if he takes all, he does not take all karma. That it is mentioned that way, but it is not like that. That may be the mood of the spiritual master, that let me take all his obstacles, let him progress. You know, that may be the mood, but that does not happen. You know, it makes no sense. Why would Krishna transfer all the karma to the spiritual master, who is willing to who is willing to take all risk to sort of spread the mission of Krishna? Why would Krishna transfer all the karma? I mean, like Murugari and Jagai Madai and such kind of people's karma, why would the Supreme Lord transfer it to the spiritual master? I mean, it makes no sense. No, that does not happen. Even though people say like that, but that is not true. I have not read it anywhere that way. I have heard people say that very, very often. It's not that I have not heard it. I have heard it many, many times. Practically every once in a while I get to hear this. But this is, in my understanding, as far as I have read, this is not true. But if the spiritual master is indiscriminate in giving initiation, not taking proper responsibility of the disciple, and then he may get punished by Krishna for accepting an errant disciple. And if the errant disciple is not willing to himself, and the spiritual master should ideally give up that disciple. So if he does not do that because of some material considerations, maybe money or prestige or something like that, then the disciple also falls down and the spiritual master also falls down. In either case, there is no karma. There is no karma. But if they fall out of devotional service, then they may come into the realm of karma. And even in that case, they will get their karma only, not anyone else's karma. This is my understanding based on what I have till now read and heard. It's not, yeah, that's my understanding. Or even if the spiritual master gets the karma of his disciples, see, the spiritual master takes the karma. definitely it happens. The spiritual master takes the karma, but he does not keep it to himself, right? So, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. The seed of devotion is received through the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And the moment that seed is received, karma is gone. But spiritual master does not keep it. So when the disciple breaks his vows, then the spiritual master suffers. In the sense, because he has taken responsibility of that disciple, and if he is not fulfilling, if he has over accepted and under delivering, if he is not able to take care, if he is not personally taking care, and if he has not made a system where the disciple is proper, then the spiritual master may suffer. But still, that is not karmic suffering. That is not karmic suffering. That is a responsibility that the spiritual master holds towards Krishna directly. That does not come under the realm of karma. There is responsibility. There is disciple is responsible, spiritual master is responsible. You accept responsibility of so many people, but you are not able to take care of them. Then some kind of reaction may come, but that is not karmic reaction. That is due to that is Krishna given reaction for not properly fulfilling the responsibility of being a spiritual master. But even there, the reaction is there only if the spiritual master is negligent, or if he is not very careful to take care of his disciple in that case. Not if he is very sincere and for the purpose of spreading the mission. So in that case, it's not like that. Yes, Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, just to follow up, when you said the spiritual master at initiation, or I guess maybe during the life of his disciple, he takes the karma but doesn't keep it. What does that mean? Doesn't he takes it?
I mean,
doesn't keep
he
it?
Takes the karma means the disciple gets out of the cycle of karma. You know, he's no longer bound by karma.
Uh-huh.
That's what it means. But he does not keep that karma and suffer for the disciples' karma, past karma.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, there are more questions coming here. I mean, I'm just wondering, what are we discussing? I mean, we are discussing Utsaha, but there is so much questions about the spiritual master. Okay, anyway. I have heard in a lecture in ISKCON temple that when Mahaprabhu embraced Jagai Mata, his bodily complexion turned dark. Yeah, it did turn dark. But that is not necessarily karma. That is just there. I mean, that is just a symbolic thing. It is not really, he did not really take their karma as such. You know, it's not, that's just a symbolic thing. So, for those devotees who are following the Ritvik system or are practicing bhakti in some deviant sampradaya, for them also, does Krishna take away all karma? No, he does not. Like for Ritvik system, though they don't accept a guru, but they accept Srila Prabhupada. So for them also, does Krishna take their personal responsibility? Well, I mean, this is not proper sampradaya. In a sampradaya, you don't, there is no there is no sort of, in one sense, that understanding is a deviant understanding. It is not proper sampradaya understanding. And so therefore, and on top of that, they commit so much offenses. So much. It is probably part of their sadhana to criticize senior devotees and exalted devotees. They don't criticize the junior devotees. They immediately start finding faults and criticizing the exalted devotees. I don't even understand. After consistently criticizing in that way, it is even possible for them to remain devotees. I am highly doubtful about that. So it is a part of their sadhana. Vaishnava Ninda is part of their sadhana. How can they continue to be devotees? As a part of their sadhana, if they do Vaishnava Ninda like that, I don't think, you know, they can remain true devotees. You know, I don't think Krishna will take away their karma. If innocently, they, out of affection for Prabhupada, if they say, I accept Prabhupada as my guru and don't commit all these offenses, then it is possible. But if these kind of, if they have, you know, Vaishnava Ninda as a part of their daily sadhana, I don't think so. It is not possible. Anyway, I think we should move on. You know, we are just, you know, even though these are relevant topics, but it is not like exactly completely directly relevant to the topic that we are discussing. Anyway, so we have been discussing about Utsaha for your information and about the seven, about the six, six favorable things which enhance one's progress in the path of bhakti. So in that we were discussing, you know, what is, without utsaha, he says, one becomes negligent in his worship, and negligence is born out of inactivity, apathy or indifference. Lazy. And then he talks about these, you know, where does one get laziness, why does one develop laziness, and how this laziness or inertia is opposed to the nature of spirit. So then if inertia remains, then to perform devotional service, and also apathy comes from carelessness, and one should practice devotional service without any deviation. And then he quotes this verse, yogo anirvinna chetasa, how one should not get demotivated when success does not come through practice of devotional service. One should remain enthusiastic. It is important. And in this context, we discuss, you know, what are the various reasons we should remain enthusiastic despite perceived failures to progress. We saw many reasons for that. And then we saw, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the cause of indifference or lack of enthusiasm is perceiving a particular activity as not being meant for oneself, which means when one does not see oneself being qualified for that activity, then one develops indifference or lack of enthusiasm for that particular activity. And therefore, then we saw the qualification for karma, jnana and yoga. Faith in bhakti is the qualification for bhakti yoga. And so we saw that so in this context, we were discussing that how that is why devotees don't feel with a lot of enthusiasm for the activities of karma, jnana, yoga, etc. Because they don't feel that they are qualified for that. Whereas they feel qualification for bhakti yoga. So then, and then we also discussed this point about how one should not say that one should also renounce, for a devotee should renounce all the activities which are meant for maintaining the physical body. You know, that is not correct. So because when the body is maintained properly, then it can be used for progressing on the path of devotional service. So therefore, one should definitely take care of one's body. That is not against the tenets of pure devotional service. So, and then we saw that how a devotee has affection for Krishna, but he may still succumb to conditioning. He may out of conditioning, he may succumb to material enjoyment. Whereas a materialist, he has affection for material enjoyment. A karmi has affection for material enjoyment, and he enjoys it with full gusto. Whereas a devotee has affection for Krishna, but he may slip and succumb to material enjoyment due to his conditioning. So, yeah. And then we saw, you know, how by practice of bhakti one develops kleshagni and shubhada. We discussed on this. We discussed the process of advancement for the sadhaka. Like that. We discussed that. And then we also discussed that how there need not be any separate enthusiastic endeavor for anartha nivritti through jnana, vairagya, yoga, etc. It is not at all needed. Enthusiasm should be there only for bhakti, because only by bhakti a devotee attains anartha nivritti and artha pravritti both. So so he says that we should not lose enthusiasm because we have no strength to destroy the reactions of karma. So reactions of karma means here, it means karma vasana. You know, that is because, you know, our conditionings are not getting destroyed immediately. We should not lose enthusiasm. In the beginning of devotional service, a sadhaka must have faith with full enthusiasm. So we discussed about, you know, purity of faith and strength of faith. You know, full enthusiasm means enthusiasm which is not enthusiasm only for bhakti and not for karma, jnana and yoga. That's what it means. So, and then we saw that in the process of bhajana kriya or engagement in bhakti, there are two types which is steady devotional service and unsteady devotional service. While we are practicing unsteady devotional service, we may be troubled by a lot of anarthas, because of which our devotional service may hardly become steady. So we should not lose enthusiasm. But when he reaches the stage of nishta or fixed devotional service, then it becomes very firm. So until he attains fixed devotional service, his service will remain flickering. And in this, we discussed about the stages of unsteady devotional service. So I promised that we will this unsteady devotional service from Madhurya Kadambini. So give me a minute. I will just open that file and then we can discuss from there. This unsteady devotional service. Just give me a minute. I'm just opening that file so that we can discuss from there. So in Madhurya Kadambini, in the second chapter of Madhurya Kadambini, Srila Bhakti, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur discusses this theme of unsteady devotional service, how even in unsteady devotional service, there is a gradual transition. So it becomes unsteady devotional service does not become steady devotional service overnight. Unsteady devotional service gradually becomes less and less unsteady and more steady. Eventually, it becomes completely steady. So let me just open that file. I've opened the file, but I'm just going to that particular section where we are discussing unsteady devotional service. I'm almost there. Just hold on for a second. Okay. Yeah, I'm there. So I will share the screen with you. Okay. So there are six types or six stages. Generally, these are not very distinct stages. They are overlapping stages. There is a significant overlap. So first, when devotional service starts, it starts with the first stage is called as Utsahamayi. Utsahamayi means the stage of false confidence. Okay. The stage of false confidence. So he describes this as a Brahmana child having just begun the study of scriptures thinks he has immediately become a learned scholar worthy of everyone's praise. Similarly, a person just beginning devotional service may develop the audacity to think that he has mastered everything. He is called Utsahamayi or puffed up with enthusiasm. And this is false enthusiasm. This is not true. We all would have gone through this experience. When we start bhakti, then we learn few things here and there. We learn about chanting, we learn about not indulging in sense gratification, no TV and all that, and immediately in 2 days we come home and then we tell our parents, shut down this TV and all that, as if we have become very perfected devotees like that. It's just like I remember, when I was in boarding school, we used to have cross country running, marathon running. So early in the morning. Other days we used to have regular physical training exercises, and we used to have cross country running. And You know, we used to have 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, like that. So as soon as a fresh batch of 6th graders come, on the first few Saturdays, if you see, as soon as the race starts, as soon as the gun shot goes, you will see these freshers just sprinting. You know, it's like a 15-kilometer race. You will see these freshers just sprinting, you know, with great speed. And they'll keep looking around their shoulders to see how far they have covered, how they are going, how the others are. And the other 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th graders are all, you know, at medium pace, they are jogging. The 6th graders are just, you know, sprinting like a arrow. And they think, and they make this kind of calculation. Oh, already in 100 meters, I have a 50 meter edge over others, which means before they complete half the race, I will complete full race. Like that, they make their calculations. But little do they know that a marathon race cannot be completed while sprinting. So what happens? After 500 meters, they are completely gassed out. They have no energy. They are just puffing and panting and standing there. And the more experienced runners are steadily, they pass by them. Their race is over in just half a kilometer. Because they don't understand. They thought they could sprint and complete the race, but they didn't understand really what it takes to complete a marathon race. So this is called as utsahamayi, or false confidence. So many times as soon as we start devotional service, sometimes we get this kind of false confidence, and within a few days we start chanting 16 rounds, and sometimes we chant 32 rounds also, or 64 rounds. And then you go around asking people, oh, how many years you have been chanting devotional service? Yeah, how many years you have been practicing devotional service? Say, Prabhu, 15 years. And how many rounds you chant every day? 16 rounds. And then inside your heart, you are in extreme ecstasy. You are thinking, I must have descended directly from Goloka Vrindavan. Prabhu, you know what? I have been chanting only for the last 3 days. I am chanting 64 rounds. So you think life is going to be like that. In 3 days, if I chant 64 rounds, within a few months, I'll be chanting 192 rounds like Srila Haridas Thakur, and I can be the next Namacharya, like that we think. Okay. But then what happens? Reality strikes. This is the second stage. This is called as ghana tarala. Ghana means thick. Tarala means thin. Thick and thin devotional practice. Okay. So this is called the stage where reality strikes. Okay. The fourth day, the devotee does not get enthusiasm to even chant one round. He says, see, I am expected to chant 16 rounds per day only. For 3 days, I have chanted 64 rounds. Which means, for the next 12 days, I have my buffer ready. So even if I don't chant for the next 12 days, even one round, I have made up for all of that. So he realizes that 64, and this will only increase, it will not decrease. And the reality is that on the fourth day, he is not having enthusiasm to chant even one round. So from 64 directly to zero. This is called as ghana tarala, thick and thin devotional practice. But from 64 to 0, it is not that he has regressed in his devotional service. This is actually progress. Why this is progress? Because he has now come in touch with reality. So, in the first stage, when that confidence was misleading confidence, that was false confidence. But this is actually a proper understanding. He understands that actually, what I thought that I could just beat everyone around me easily. You know, I could, if on the third day only I'm chanting 64 rounds, then, you know, a year from now I will be the next Haridas. So it's all the bubble burst here. Reality is that you are incapable of chanting even one round the next day. This is reality. Because he has come in touch with reality, this stage is actually a progress. Because that 64 was not real 64. That 64 was just the initial kick of Rajogun, that's all. But then, when Tamogun caught up with Rajogun the next day, that is actual reality. So this is called as Ghana Tarala. So the same child sometimes becomes diligently engaged in his studies, and yet at other times, because of inability to understand the scriptures and lack of real taste, becomes negligent. In the same way, a new devotee will sometimes practice the different activities of devotional service and sometimes neglect them. So this is called as Ghana Tarala. But this is reality. So when we come in touch with reality, rather than being under false confidence, this is actually progress. Okay. So then comes, so he says, being sometimes assiduous and at other times negligent, his endeavor is called Ghana Tarala, condensed, dilute, or thick and thin. Okay. Then comes the third stage, which is called as Vyuda Vikalpa. Vyuda Vikalpa means excessive speculation. Or you can say calculation. Excessive calculation. So at this stage, he thinks thick and thin devotion is not good. I have to steadily practice. But why am I not able to steadily practice devotional service? He thinks. Why is it so impossible for me to steadily practice devotional service? So he says, well, maybe I am having to travel so much for my work, you know. 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the evening, and then 10 hours at work. So 16 hours goes just in my work. And then I have to have at least 6 hours sleep, then at least 2 hours to do other things. Then it hardly leaves me with any proper time for my japa and other things. Maybe it's my job that is the reason. Or maybe it is my ashram that is the reason. Maybe I should be living in a dham, in some ashram, rather than in the city working. In this way, he sort of keeps deliberating. You know, he thinks, shall I just spend my life happily in family life, making my wife and children Krishna conscious and worshipping the Lord? Or should I give them all up and go to Vrindavan and perfect myself by engaging full time in hearing and chanting with no distractions? What should I do? So in this way, he keeps, shall I wait until the last stage after enjoying all sorts of pleasures, when I have finally understood that the whole material world is simply a forest fire of affliction? Should I wait till an old age when I have practical realization is not a good place? and then I should go to Vrindavan, or should I renounce everything and go right now? So, and then he, you know, I don't want to go into the details. He gets supporting verses from the scriptures to support both the understandings, and in this way he keeps debating which is right, which is wrong. So basically, this is an advanced stage where he is no longer happy with his unsteady practice of devotional service. He wants to rectify it, but in trying to rectify it, he, according to his level of advancement, he is able to see that the external factors are the cause for his unsteadiness. His ashram is the cause. His ashram is the cause. His profession is the cause. You know, all these things, he is able to see only external factors, which may be somewhat, if not the complete cause, which may be at least part of the cause, but this is not the complete cause. So this is called as Vyuda Vikalpa, where he is dissatisfied with this unsteady practice of devotional service, and he is searching for cause of his unsteady practice in externally. But after searching out this way, he realizes that, oh, even though I have changed my job, I have changed my ashram, I have changed everything, my devotional service is unsteady. Now I have 4 extra hours every day, but I'm still chanting 16 rounds only. And still, it's not that my 16 rounds have become more attentive. Still, my 16 rounds are inattentive only. So, what is the cause? What could be the cause of what could be the cause of my unsteady devotional service? Then he realizes that it is his unsteady mind and senses. So, when one progresses little further, then one develops the ability not just to see external obstacles, but one becomes qualified to see even internal obstacles. It was not just, actually, my profession and my ashram, they were actually, they did cause obstacles, but it was not significant. A more significant obstacle for my steady practice of devotional service was coming actually from my unsteady mind and senses. So this realization dawns after some more maturity in devotional service. So then starts this stage of Vishaya Sangara, which is called as struggle with mind and senses. Struggle with senses. So, Vishayavishta Chittanam Vishnavesha Sudurata Varuni Diggatam Vastu Vrajan Indrinkim. One whose heart is absorbed in materialism is far from obtaining devotion to Vishnu. Can a man by going east obtain something which is in the west? So, understanding that material enjoyment is forcibly carrying him away and impairing his steadiness in serving Krishna, the devotee resolves to renounce his addictions and take shelter of the holy name. But many times his attempts at renunciation often end in enjoying what he is trying to renounce. So he wants to give up sense gratification, but he ends up enjoying the very same things. So this struggle for this struggle with his uncontrolled mind and senses, this is called as Vishaya Sangara. And this continues. So then his mind becomes absorbed in trying to control is unsteady senses and mind. And in this way, this controls for a long time. And gradually he gains more success, you know. Initially, he may be succumbing once a week, then later it becomes once in 2 weeks, then once a month, then once in 2 months. In this way, gradually he gains more and more, success in controlling his senses. He is attaining success. This is called as Vishaya Sangara, in which he progresses from there also. Okay. Then, so this ongoing battle with his previously acquired desires for sense pleasure, in which he sometimes meets with victory and sometimes with Vishaya Sangara or struggle with sense pleasure. So this is not that in the previous stages his senses were controlled or mind was controlled. But in the previous stages, he was not advanced enough to notice and identify that the real problem was with his uncontrolled mind and senses. He was not qualified to even notice it. But now he is able to notice because he has become actually advanced. He has become advanced. Now he is able to see. And gradually he starts working on steadying his mind and senses, in which initially he gets some success. After that, he may fail, and then he may get little more success, then he may fail. So this struggle with uncontrolled mind and senses is called as Vishaya Sangara. Then, after that, he may sort of gain fairly good control over his mind and senses. And then he may start actually focusing more on increasing his positive devotional vows. Okay. So to increase one's chanting, increasing the rounds, okay, or increasing hearing. Okay. So more books distribution. Okay. So he positively start enhancing his practices. So his mind becomes focused on that. And in doing that, he may take many vows. I will chant so many extra rounds every day. But in that, he may attain success sometimes and he may fail sometimes. So this attaining success sometimes and failure sometimes, this is called as Niyama Akma. So this is called as Niyama Akshama. Akshama means inability. Niyama means vows. So inability to keep vows. So this is not talking about inability to keep the vows in terms of the four regulative principles. That comes in the previous stage, which is called as Vishaya Sangara. But this is positive vows. You know, I will chant so many extra rounds like that. So that is called as Niyama Akshama. So then the devotee will resolve, from today I will chant such and such number of rounds of japa and will pay so many obeisances. I will also perform services for the devotees. I will not talk on any subject except the Lord, and I will give up all association with people who talk on material matters. So though he makes such resolutions every day, he is not always able to execute them. This is called as Niyama Akshama, or inability to follow the rules. Okay. While Vishaya Sangara is the inability to give up material enjoyment, whereas Niyama Akshama is the inability to improve his devotional service. So this is the next stage of when one at some stage, in the fourth stage, the unsteadiness is caused due to our mind being constantly absorbed in controlling our mind and senses. In the fifth stage, the unsteadiness is caused due to our mind being absorbed in the struggle to keep up our vows, devotional vows. Okay. But at some stage, we may become efficient enough to even control our mind and senses and actually positively enhance our devotional practices also. But then, when we reach that particular stage, then what happens? People start recognizing and puja labh pratishta. You know, there is lot of glorification, fame, name, fame, glorification, facilities, all of that come, and we may become very much carried away by that name, fame, glorification, and we may start enjoying it. So that is called as taranga rangini. So he says, finally, it is well known that the very nature of bhakti is to be attractive. So all types of people become attracted to the devotee who is the abode of bhakti. As the old adage goes, by the attraction of populace, one becomes wealthy. So when attraction comes, then wealth also follows. So bhakti produces much opportunity for worship and position. Puja labh pratishta. These are weeds around the creeper of bhakti. So performing activities or seeking one's pleasure amidst these weed-like facilities, which are but small waves, taranga, in the ocean of bhakti, is called taranga rangini, or delighting in material facilities. So this is the sixth stage where after properly practicing devotional service and properly upholding devotional vows, when actually name, fame, glorification follows, we get completely carried away by that, and instead of focusing on bhakti, we focus on that name, fame, glorification. So this is called as taranga rangini. Surfing in the waves of puja labh pratishta. This is taranga rangini. So in this way, even though, anyway, I will not go into detail of all these things, but this is, you know, so I will summarize the six stages. The first stage is called as utsahamayi, or false confidence. Then comes ghana tarala, thick and thin practice. Okay. And then comes, viewed a vikalpa, where the person understands that this kind of thick and thin practice is no good. I need to practice steadily. But why is my practice unsteady? He understands that the unsteadiness is caused due to the external factors. That's what he's able to immediately see. So he tries to fix these external factors. But still he realizes his practice is unsteady. Why? Because then he realizes that the real problem was not the external things, but the real problem is my uncontrolled mind and senses. And then he tries to fix that. And then he starts thinking about positively enhancing his devotional service. In that also, sometimes he gets success, sometimes failure. This is called as niyama akshama. And when he gains fairly good success in that also, then people start glorifying him, start giving him facilities and all that. And when he starts enjoying that, that is called as taranga rangini. And when he overcomes all these stages, then eventually his practice becomes steady or nishta. So till one reaches that stage of steady devotional service, lot of anarthas will actually lead to the six stages of unsteady devotional practice. So here Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhakti Aloka is telling that one should understand that in the initial stages, one's practice will be unsteady only. And one should not get loose enthusiasm because they are not able to reach steady practice. Because steady practice comes from gradually navigating through these six stages of unsteady practice. Okay. So, I am sure with our brief stages, you all must have sort of understood. Generally, these are not distinct stages. There would be a significant overlap of stages. You know, some of you might identify, two overlaps, three overlaps. Sometimes someone may even have four overlaps. So in your practice. So therefore, our practice will be steady. So we will have up and down practice. So therefore, during this stage, and this is natural, as long as there is influence of mode of passion and mode of ignorance, you know, there will always be unsteady practice. And gradually, when anartha nivritti happens, then this unsteady practice will go away and steady practice will get established. So therefore, while our practice is unsteady, one should not lose enthusiasm thinking that, oh, I am not able to steady my practice at all. Because we should understand that unsteady practice is natural and only gradually will steady practice get established. So unsteady practice is better than no practice. So with that in mind, we should maintain enthusiasm. That's what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning there. So now, let us do a small exercise. For those of you who do not mind sharing, do you identify yourselves in some of these stages, you know, in your own practice of devotional service? You can please raise your hands. The six stages of service that we discussed. Do you identify yourself in some of these stages? Slowly more devotees are raising their hands. Okay. Okay. So now my next question is, would any one of you, at least some of you, mind which of these stages do you think it is, you know, your own practice overlaps which of these stages? Can you share by typing in the chat box? Can you say, is it B, C, D, or C, D, E, or D and E, or E and F? Would you like to share? Okay, someone says D and E, struggle with the senses and inability to uphold vows. Okay, someone says it's predominantly Vishaya Sangara. Okay, thank you. Would anyone else like to share? You will not be judged, don't worry, based on your answers. Someone says A, D, E. Oh, it's not possible. False confidence and then directly struggle with senses and inability to uphold vows. Because false confidence means it will definitely be followed with sporadic endeavor. Someone says all. Okay, all is, yeah, possible. It's not that it is impossible. Generally, Someone says D and E, struggle with senses and inability to uphold vows. Yeah. In today's day and age, actually, okay, C, D, E. Many are telling C, D, E. Yeah, it's possible. See, in actually this stage, F should ideally come in the later stage. But in today's day and age, with all this YouTube videos and social media and all that, people can become famous even within the spiritual circles. People can become famous overnight for no significant reason, actually. They may be able to speak something, or they may be able to sing kirtans, or they may be so in reality, because no one is seeing you, because no one is seeing you, even though we may give a lecture and there may be many people who may appreciate it, but they are not actually seeing us in person, so they don't know about our struggles. So because we are only virtually connected to people, people may actually glorify us way more than what we deserve. And that is not true glorification, actually, because they don't know us completely. So therefore, this Tarangarangini, the sixth stage, may come well before while we are struggling with our senses, and while we are struggling with our ability to uphold our vows, so we have to be careful. Anyway, so the point is, whatever it may be, we may catch ourselves struggling with either indecision or sporadic endeavor, or sometimes struggling with the senses, sometimes inability to uphold our vows. And all these things are, so the problem is that we should not lose enthusiasm. We should not lose enthusiasm through all these things, because this will continue. We have to be, as long as we put sincere endeavor, gradually with our progress on the path of devotional service, when the influence of Rajogun and Tamogun go away, then naturally over a period of time, we will we will slowly cross through. It may start with A, then we will come to B, then there may be overlap of B and C, then there may be an overlap of B, C and D, and then gradually B will decrease, C will decrease, D will increase, and then gradually E will start, then D will decrease and E will increase, and when D decreases and E increases, naturally F will start. Then after a period of time, if we have some good association, people will say, Prabhu, you are doing everything nicely, but why are you taking this glorification and all these things too seriously? Why don't you just focus on your devotion? Then you understand, what was I doing? I am just getting caught up with this external glorification and all that, and which is causing a lot of instability in my practice of devotional service. And then one may slowly give that up also with more and more purification. Then the influence of Rajogun and Tamogun even more decreases, and then eventually one reaches the stage of Nishta. But this is a long, this Anishtita Bhajana Kriya and Anartana Vritti, this is very long. It may take very long. So therefore, one should not lose enthusiasm. That is what here Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling, that, now I'll share the, let me share the screen. Okay, not this. So he says that until he attains fixed devotional services, service remains flickering. So therefore, but in this stage of devotional service, there are six symptoms, and he says, so in Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas, carelessness is counted amongst the offenses. So he says that unsteady devotional service can be a very important reason for actually, you know, loss of enthusiasm. So one should be very careful to take care of for enthusiasm, and we can maintain that enthusiasm as long as we understand that it is natural, that everyone goes through steadiness does not come overnight. I have to endeavor and earn that. So therefore, I should remain enthusiastic rather than lose enthusiasm just because I am not able to steadily practice. So this is very important. Okay. There is another question here. If someone is able to follow the initiation vows, then it means he has already crossed the A and B stages. To some extent, yes. See, Ghanatarala will be there till the end. You know, there will be some up and down practices will be there. But it may be very, the difference between up and down may keep decreasing. It may start becoming more and more steady, but it will be there. So, yeah, does every stage have its, all stages of unsteady devotional service have the same sadhana. Yeah, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam, association of devotees, good devotees, the same practice, but just that with that practice, with more and more anartha nivritti getting accomplished, we'll be slowly able to cross the lower stages and go to higher and higher stages like that. Okay. So, okay, there is a question then. So, if Ghanatarala lasts till end, so see, Ghanatarala as a stage, you can say, is when there is serious Ghanatarala. You know, like for example, in the Ganatarala stage, someone may chant 16 rounds one day and 0 rounds the other day. But in Niyamakshama, he is able to take care of the basic things, and with the additional vows, he is not able to keep up. The additional increase, he is not able to keep up. That is the problem. How long can Utsahamayi stage last? Can it last for years? Generally not, unless someone is a lunatic. Because if you are in right association of devotees, very quickly reality dawns. And I don't think, I mean, if Utsahamayi lasts for years, then which means that is actually Nishta then. If on first day he is able to chant 64, second day he is able to chant 64, and for years he is able to chant 64, how is that Utsahamayi? That is not Utsahamayi. That is very steady devotional service actually. So generally Utsahamayi cannot last for years, you know. It generally would last for a few days, at the most a few weeks maybe. But when we slowly get introduced to different elements of devotional service, there might be that may be there. But generally, when we start hearing philosophy and understanding, very quickly and we start actually practicing, very quickly this Utsahamayi stage goes, and we understand that actually our stage is Ghana Tarala. So I would be really surprised to see someone in Utsahamayi stage for years, and I don't think it's possible at all. It's impossible. Then, which means that person has not understood what is Utsahamayi. That is not Utsahamayi. It cannot last for years. If one is able to maintain that kind of enthusiasm for years, then it is amazing actually. Then that is Nishta. That is not Utsahamayi. That is Nishta, I would say. Okay. Anything else before we move ahead? Yes, Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I just wanted to get the Sanskrit for some of the terms like Niyama Akshama, right? So
yeah, Niyama rules. Yeah. And Akshama means inability.
Inability. Okay, then another one I had was with Vishaya Sangara.
Yeah. So Sangara means, Vishaya means senses or senses, and Sangara means struggle. So Vishaya Sangara means struggle with the senses.
Okay. I think that was probably it. Taranga is waves, right? Is it?
I am sorry, I could not hear you. Can you please repeat, Mataji?
Taranga is waves.
Taranga Rangini. Taranga is waves. Rangini means to enjoy. So the material facilities, name, fame, etc. is compared to small waves. And we are surfing the waves rather than the bhakti is compared to the ocean, where you can dive deep into the ocean and get valuable jewels from there. But we are just happy surfing the waves, surface waves. So yes, that is so called as, yeah, that is called as Taranga Rangini.
So these waves is still in the category of unsteadiness, because during the times that you are enjoying these material facilities,
you are distracted.
You're using those facilities for selfish enjoyment instead of using those facilities for Krishna's enjoyment.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So there is a question in the chat box. If we get name, fame, prestige through bhakti, should we run away or use it in Krishna's service? Well, of course, we should definitely use it in Krishna's service. But if we are not able to, if we are getting too distracted, then maybe we should take some guidance. That's what I would say. This is critical. Or utilize it, we need a guidance of senior Vaishnavas, and we can take guidance. Okay, so then we started discussing about inattentiveness in Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas. Carelessness is counted amongst the offenses against the holy name. In that scripture, the word pramada is described as inattentiveness. Sri Harinam Chintamani has further divided this inattentiveness in three ways. Apathy, inactivity, and distraction are the three types of inattentiveness. So, he says that until one gets free from these three types of inattentiveness, one cannot perform devotional service at all with enthusiasm. Okay. So presence of inattentiveness is the symptom of lack of enthusiasm. So how to become enthusiastic? It means the answer for that is, how can one overcome inattention? Okay, so we will actually pause here, because today has been a long day for me and my throat needs some rest. So I think we'll pause here, and next week positively, someone please remind me during the week. We will actually discuss from Harinam Chintamani about overcoming inattentiveness in our devotional service in general and in our chanting in specific. So we will discuss this theme, because the key to enthusiastic practice is to overcome inattention. So I thought of discussing it today, but that would be, we have hardly have 10-12 minutes left for today's discussion, and I'm feeling a little exhausted, honestly. I'm sorry. So I think we will pause here, and we will continue this discussion next Wednesday. And next Wednesday, I'll definitely share discussions from Harinam Chintamani. Thank you all very much for your patient listening, and I apologize for cutting short today's discussion, and we will continue this discussion next week. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ki jai, Sri Madhurya Kadambini ki jai, Sri Bhakti Aloka ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.